Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Our next guest has 22 Grammys. He's sold hundreds of millions of albums, but nothing makes him quite as happy as his Dublin garden, where the magnolia trees put on a show to rival U2. And he's going to be speaking about nature and sustainability at a fashion and farming festival, would you believe? It's happening in Cork. He also is the man with the greatest hair in bass player rock and roll history. Adam Clayton, good morning.
Good morning, Oliver. That's quite an intro. I hope I can live up to it.
Absolutely no doubt about it. We know you have a huge interest in gardening in the natural world from your own woodland gardens that have featured in Gardener's World on BBC last year. You've been working on these gardens for over 30 years.
Yeah, I was very lucky that early on in life, I was able to buy, you know, a house that I thought would serve me for the rest of my life, and it happened to have 17 acres of kind of overmature woodlands. And rather than just sit and look at it, I thought, okay, well, let's get stuck in here, and I'll just plant some trees, and I'll get the benefit of that later on in life. And that sort of just turned into a bit of an obsession. And ultimately, you know, I went down to Mount Congreve and I saw the magnolia displays down there and the camellias. And I thought I'd love to have a bit of that up at my house in Dublin. So I started to plant magnolias, and I am getting the benefit of them now, because those trees are now 30 years old and 20 and 30 metres high.
Because they could take a couple of years. You have to be very patient with magnolias. They could take some years to bloom. Is that right?
Oh, they're coy creatures. Yeah, they won't show you their blooms for a while. So, I mean, not all of them are so reticent, but 5 or 6 years before you see anything.
I was talking to gardeners only recently about magnolias, and they were saying, no, don't bother with them. They're a waste. They'll bloom for a fortnight in March and April if you're lucky, and then nothing for the year.
But that's the whole point.
But I'm sure you have different varieties that kind of bloom. They can bloom till June, can they?
Yeah, there are some later blooms. But actually, the point is that they bloom, you know, when there's no green on anything. And, you know, they just give you hope that spring is coming.
They look a bit spectacular because there's no leaves anywhere on them. They're like little ice cream scoops of colour, pinks and whites, presumably yellows as well.
Yeah, so you get the magnolias, you get the camellias, you get the rhododendrons, and you get the bulbs all kind of happening around the same time. And it's just, I think it's a wonderful display. And it's a way of bringing forward the spring and bringing forward the summer. And you know the seasons are going to follow each other.
Rhododendrons now, mentioning them in Ireland, people go, no, they'll invade everything. But obviously you've got the nice ones, the kind ones.
Yeah, I mean, I think the common ones that you see in all the hedgerows and everything, I mean, I know people complain about them, but I actually think they're a great kind of natural species that we have, and I'm always happy to see them. But yeah, over the years, you know, I've planted some more exotic specimens, and they take a long time as well. I mean, whenever I visit historic Irish gardens, I'm always interested in looking at the rhododendrons and how well they've done.
Is that something you do often, wandering into historic houses in Ireland and searching the gardens?
Well, because of where I am in Rathfarnham, I've got access to a lot of the Wicklow gardens. Yeah. So at different times, I'll go down to them, see them at different times of year. And, you know, I know some of the people there, and my head gardener, Dara, knows a lot of them. So if I've got time, I love just pottering about, putting on an old anorak, and off I go, you know.
And you come back with ideas for what to do in your gardens.
And if I'm lucky, a few plants.
Oh, yes. Are you a hands-on gardener yourself? Because I know you have a head gardener and you have people working there, because nobody could do this on their own.
Well, I, you know, these days I'm not so handy with a spade, but certainly in the early days when it was just me and another fella, we'd be digging holes and cleaning things out and everything. But those days, I'm afraid, are a little gone now behind me.
Oh dear, that must be just a personal choice.
Partly, I'm away a lot, but you know, yeah. I'm not always around at the appropriate times. You know, I'd love to be, and it's obviously a place of great solace. But I feel if I can get out in the garden regularly and take a walk around and make a note of a few ideas, and then, you know, talk to the team, then that's the most use I can be.
There's a brilliant story, isn't there? Because you were in school next door, looking over the wall at these grounds once upon a time.
Yeah, these grounds were my escape I was in a boarding school, and you know, if you're in a place of internment like that, you spend a lot of time looking over the wall, imagining what life might be like. And I used to look into this garden and think, oh, that looks like an amazing place. And I'd never come into it from, you know, up through the front gate or anything. So many years later, when we were renting a house for Joshua Tree, I arrived up through the front gate, and it took me a while to realize that this was the house right next to the school that I knew quite well. So it was just that it was serendipitous that it was there, that we were working there, and it then made sense to make an offer at the end of the recording process, and I was lucky enough to get it.
Was the M50 on its way, or had been built at that stage, because it was nearby?
Yeah, I knew the M50 was coming. I mean, it was pre the M50. It was extraordinary. It was so silent at the weekends, and yeah. you could hear people playing sport down in Marley Park. It would kind of roll up the hill. Obviously, the M50 changed all that, but it didn't actually hit my land. So I felt like I was lucky enough to have a good buffer, but. You know, it kind of really helped because I can get to the airport in about 20, 30 minutes on a good run.
But obviously the trees help block out a lot of the sound, and that would have been part of the campaign, the project.
You would think that they would do that, but actually they're not great at absorbing sound.
Really?
It's really the prevailing winds that make the most difference.
Right. How many trees do you reckon you've planted there in those near 30 years?
I've probably been responsible for planting about 4,000.
Really?
But of course, when you do that, you know, there's a lot of wastage because you have to thin them at various stages as well. But it's a lot of trees, and I'm very committed to planting trees. I think deforestation of the countryside is a terrible thing. I think woodlands are kind of magical places. They're great resources to be able to walk through.
And there's obviously loads of it's a wild habitat for a lot of creatures. I think I read somewhere that you adopted hedgehogs and released them into your garden. Is that true?
I have become a bit of a hedgehog father, yeah. Linda Martin, who runs a dog refuge, I was visiting her, and I was interviewing her for some Showband documentary I was doing.
Oh yeah.
And she happened to have some hedgehogs, and I just think they're kind of magical creatures, and my daughter is an 8-year-old, and she's very interested in them as well. So I took them home. I'm sort of interested in the rewilding movement, yeah. Although it's not something that I do up at Danesmoat so much. But if you have a lot of land, the idea of turning it back to the way it would be before there was any intervention by modern farming methods or land control methods is something I'm interested in. And Isabella Tree, who was behind the rewilding at Knepp House in England, I interviewed her once at the Boris Literary Festival, yeah. And very interesting woman, very interesting what they've done there and what they've been able to achieve.
When you go back into the gardens, because you're out of the country at the minute, Is there something particularly you look forward to that you're excited about seeing when you go back into the woodlands that you're looking out for, and particularly as we're coming into the days of May?
You know, in a way, it's always the trees because I kind of notice how much growth they've put on, and because we're always in a process of thinning and sort of making space, I'm kind of looking at how the form has changed and what it offers us. I mean, I actually just love the walking as well. I mean, there's something nice to be walking, you know, amongst the trees and the dappled light that we get.
And there's a lovely river running through it, I could see on that BBC programme.
Well, it's more of a stream than a river, but it becomes a river in the winter.
What do you get out of it when you're strolling around the woodlands?
I think I get right-sized. You know, I spend a lot of time running around the place, sort of in aeroplanes or in vans going places and whatever. And there's something quite nice about just being reduced to how far can I walk in 10 minutes and what will I see? And you know, nature's there before any of us, and it's probably going to be there long after we've all gone. It has a different kind of time scale than we do.
Yeah, right size is a lovely way of putting it, because I know you've oak trees and they're really long. They've long stories, oak trees.
Yeah, I love the oak trees. And oaks will, of course, survive over very long periods of time. And you know, we're learning more and more about the sort of plant kingdom and the way that the trees communicate
with each other
and are connected to each other.
It's bizarre, isn't it? They kind of communicate through their roots.
Yeah.
Does anyone else in U2 talk about gardening in the same way that you do?
I don't think so. I'm just a particular kind of a character. I think because I was in schools, boarding schools from the age of eight, and they were always set in quite remote but nice places, even though the experience was not so good. So I got great solace and strength from being outdoors. It was one of those things that really helped me with that feeling of isolation.
It really does sound like you didn't like boarding school.
I was in boarding school at a time where they weren't very hospitable places, and it didn't suit me. I was sensitive and creative. Yeah. I was not rough and tough and sporty. You know, I didn't want to play football and rugby and beat the shite out of the other kids.
not good at sport. Thank God you had a talent. And you saw that notice in the school that Larry Mullen Jr. put up looking for people to join a band. That's 50 years next year, September 1976. And you two, of course, great at planning those big occasions far, far out. Is this an anniversary you're thinking about marking?
You know, we know it's there. We know it's coming along. We are not particularly going to celebrate it, though, you know, these things are very hard to predict. But I'm sure, you know, whilst we, you know, we might not be able to align an album or a tour to celebrate that moment, I'm sure we'll be opening a bottle of champagne on the day.
The Edge has been teasing everybody recently in interviews about new music on the way. Have you any updates for us, Adam?
Oh, he's been teasing me as well. I have. The only thing I can say is that it's a work in progress.
All right.
And we do not have a deadline as such, but I would hope that by the end of the year we would have some information to share, and perhaps we could suggest something for next year.
Oh, it's like the magnolias. We won't hear anything for a while, and then they bloom beautifully.
Yeah, exactly.
At the Edge, I'm looking at the quote in Rolling Stone. We're recording science fiction Irish folk music with Brian Eno. Is that something you've heard of?
That sounds about right.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Sci-fi Irish folk music.
Yeah, I think we're heading off in that direction.
Fascinating. Okay. Now, the Sphere was the last major thing we saw you two doing. And of course, poor Larry had to sit that out. We haven't heard or seen much of Larry Mullen in a while. Is he okay now?
Yeah, he's absolutely, you know, he's back behind his kit. He's got his sticks out and he's great. He's great. Better than ever. Bionic Man.
He missed the Sphere and it was probably weird for a bit, was it? Being a threesome, obviously with some help on the drums, but not being the pure foursome.
Yeah, you never like to go out there, you know, not at full strength. And, you know, he's been in our gang. He's one of us right from day one. So that was difficult. But, you know, it was also, you know, it's nice to be able to say, OK, you go get your stuff done. You need some, you know, you need a little bit of maintenance and, you know, get right, get fixed, and, you know, we'll keep your seat warm for you.
Which you did. For a man who loves the natural world, those gigs, 40 gigs in the Sphere, September 23 to March of last year, how did you find those, being in such a massive dome of technology?
It's, you know, you're out in the desert, you're inside, you're in air conditioning all the time, but you know, that is the nature of the working world for us, or certainly for me, is, you know, you are in an urban environment most of the time, but it's, you know, it's the contrast, it's the difference. It's, you know, if you're a musician, that's your job. You have to get in a bus and go travel and meet the audience wherever they are. And it just so happens that they tend to be in kind of urban areas. And that's what you do.
I want to ask you about Fashion and Farming. This festival is happening in Cork that you're speaking about. What are you going to tell them there in Kinsale?
Well, I'm basically in Kinsale and I'm turning up for Fashion and Farming because I want to find out what it's all about. I want to, you know, I'm there to learn. And I think the idea of Fashion and Farming being linked is an amazing idea and a very exciting idea. I don't think it's about, you know, farmers wearing silk scarves for the farming ploughing championships.
Yeah, okay. That's a nice idea.
I think there's more to it than personal style, and it's kind of interesting that the fashion industry, particularly when you focus on fast fashion, you know, it is the second highest user of water, and it is indeed the second polluter after the petrol and oil and gas industries. So, you know, it's a serious problem that we have to change the way we look at it and the way we value it. And of course, farming needs to change if we're going to protect the soil and be sustaining. So these are all issues that I'm interested in, and I'm very curious to see what the panel of speakers will say. You know, we have the land gardeners there, which is Bridget Ellsworthy and Henrietta Courtauld, who, you know, are very progressive about how one treats the soil. Yeah. I think there's going to be some interesting chats. We've got Dorina Allen there as well. And I think it's going to be a really good weekend. It's the first one. It's obviously going to grow and change. But I think there'll be something to learn and plenty of people to interact with. Mairead McGuinness is doing a talk as well. So plenty for everyone.
And you're there for 2 days. Very generous with your time on the 10th and 11th of May in beautiful.
Well, you know, I like Kinsale. I think it's a wonderful part of the world, and any excuse to be down there, and I'll be there.
It really sounds like you get around Ireland quite a lot, which is lovely to hear. Adam Clayton, thank you so much for your time. Adam's going to be speaking at the Fashion and Farming Festival, Kinsale, County Cork, 10th and 11th of May. You can go to fashionandfarming.com for tickets.
Yeah, thank you so much, Oliver, and maybe see you there.
Absolutely. So long. Thanks, Adam.
Thanks, man.
Fair play to Adam Clayton. We need more people appreciating and planting woodlands for the next generation, says Damien. Another one says, how about an album called The Magnolia Tree? Which will only be one voice in you two saying that. I'm listening to Adam Clayton regarding the magnolias. I have a magnolia colossus given to me by my late mother. It blooms for her birthday on the 1st of March every year. And Adam is right. It does give you great hope that the winter is almost over and spring is on the way. It's one of the first things to bloom in the garden and I just love it. Wishing Adam all the best. That's from Rachel in Black Rock.